Hello, welcome back, listeners, to the CMPL podcast. My name is Megan. I am a librarian in the Adult Services Department. And today I'm very excited to have some special guests with me for a topic that I chose because I love to talk about books that I hated. Are you all excited to talk about books that you also hated?
Always.
Oh, yes.
There's something about a book that just like provokes a visceral reaction in you. And sometimes that visceral reaction is, oh my God, I love this. I love these characters. They're like real people to me. And sometimes that reaction is, this is hot garbage and I want everyone else to experience it. And I don't know what it is about that impulse, but do you also have that where it's like, I hated this, and so now I want someone else to also hate it with me?
Oh, yeah. Yes. I mean, what is it? What's the quote? Hatred loves company. It's not actually that, but it's...
misery loves company.
There we go. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but we can substitute hatred here, I think, or even just dislike.
Just dislike, yeah. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say about that. So I am very excited to talk about the books that I brought today, which I did not care for. I did not care for and can talk quite a bit about how I did not care for them, even though these are super popular books. So don't, you know, be mad at us for hating on these books because these authors are fine. These books have plenty of, well, at least mine, the ones that I hated, other people have liked just fine.
I was going to ask you about that. Is one of the books you brought Colleen Hoover or?
Oh, it is.
Okay. We'll talk about
that. Do we have
it
over?
All right. Let's get into Verity. Verity is the first book that I'm going to talk about that I hated. This book is so popular. It is so popular. Like there have been no copies on the shelf. You can't keep Colleen Hoover in the building. And this book is so bad. Now, full disclosure. I did read the whole thing and I read the whole thing in like a day. So maybe people are attracted to the fact that it's a very quick read. I mean, I get that. It's nice to have a novel that you can read in a few hours, but also like it made no sense. Have any of you read Verity?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nicole? You read it too, Nicole. Okay.
And yeah. Did you hate it?
Did we actually introduce ourselves, by the way?
Oh, maybe not. Sorry.
Yeah. So along with Megan, I'm Nicole. Justine's here and Ray as well from our you're in teens, right, Ray?
Well, I'm in outreach, but I do teen outreach. Yeah. Yes. I got a funny little overlap position. So
nice. I have nothing good to say, so I'm gonna let Justine take over in a second. Can I just
say, though?
That's
the point, Nicole.
Listen,
that's what we're here to do.
I am just so frustrated to constantly be seeing these books everywhere after having read them and just being like, if I were a publisher, I would have turned it down. I would have said, no, thank you. Learn to write in English, please. And then we will try it again.
Yeah.
But that's not what happened.
Well, I was going to say, what's interesting to me is that, like, I know you read thrillers and stuff, Nicole, but, like, I don't really read contemporary romance. I do not read thrillers, and that's mostly, like, what Colleen Hoover writes, and I had just picked it up to be like, okay, I have a person ask me about Colleen Hoover every single day, and so I was like, I just need to find out what's the hype, like, you know, just so that I know for myself, and it was not for me. So I was like, I gave it the benefit of the doubt because I was like, okay, at least this isn't my thing. Like, I don't read this genre. I don't have any interest in it. So I'm not a person who's like speaking from experience here. I just thought it was, oh, okay, this is not for me. But yeah.
No, we think it was actually bad. Okay, so if you have not read Colleen Hoover or if you haven't read this particular book, Verity, according to people who read a lot of Colleen Hoover, this is the only book by her that I've read. This is so different from her other books, which are contemporary romance, but also from what I understand, there's a lot of drama, 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 and crying. So I don't know. But Verity is a thriller, which is a departure for her.
You can't call something a thriller just because the relationship is scary.
And I mean, like, also, I guess there are like twists in it. So it follows the main character, Lowen, not Lauren, Lowen, Ashley, who is a struggling writer on the brink of financial ruin when she accepts the job offer of a lifetime. The husband of this author of a best-selling series hires her to ghostwrite the last books in the series because this wife author, best-selling author, has had a car crash and is in a vegetative state and can no longer finish the books. So, but she's under contract, so Loewen comes in to ghostwrite them. And she has no money and no friends and no family and no professional contacts and no nothing. Like, apparently she's lived in New York for however long and there's literally no one in her life, nowhere she can go. She's being kicked out of her apartment. So she decides she's going to live with these people while she finishes the book. And you know what? I'm a girl who likes to save a buck. Sure. I'm questioning, yeah. But sure. So she gets there. She's going through the office and she finds this manuscript, and this manuscript is the source of so much debate that is supposedly Verity, the author's autobiography, in which she basically catalogs every horrible thing that you could think of as like things that she actually did. And Loewen buys it. And Loewen starts to believe that Verity is not only a horrible person who maybe killed her family, but maybe also is not in a vegetative state and is like, you know, trying to mess with her family still from beyond the coma. I don't know. Basically, nothing in this book makes any sense. None of the characters have internal consistency. Like, everything, it was just sort of like Colleen Hoover came up with a list of like taboo subjects and tried to put them all in the book. And so half the people who don't like this book are like, oh, it was so awful to read about what a terrible person she is. Colleen Hoover is disturbed. And I'm like, it can only be disturbed if you actually believe it. And I literally believe nothing in this book. Everything just seemed like a joke.
It's there, you know?
Some Goodreads, what do you call them? Reviews were the unseasoned Walmart brand version of Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. This is not a romance or a thriller. This is a Lifetime movie script. Oh my God. And my review was like reading V.C. Andrews, but I'm not a teenager anymore. So this is not interesting. I just thought it was awful. It was not disturbing. It was not believable. I hated everyone in the book and I thought they were boring. And then there are like these like super explicit, the super explicit sex scenes between Loewen and the husband, despite the fact that there's a coma lady upstairs and Loewen thinks she's trying to kill her. Like, lots of good reasons not to get into literal bed with this dude.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
It was just weird to me. Like, I don't know, because this is gonna sound odd as well, but like it was a very taboo thing going on. But then she was also like continually kink shaming her ex for being into choking. And I was like, but you're also having sex with a guy whose like wife is in a coma
upstairs.
That's like
in her house.
I don't think she should be throwing around judgment over here.
Like, it was also maybe in a coma.
Yeah. Also, maybe in a coma.
I could almost forgive you for the coma thing. It's been a while. You know, people have needs, etc. But you don't believe she's in a coma.
Exactly. You think she might be trying to kill you. So now, let's hook up.
There's
it just made no sense.
I think she has a reason to kill you. That's all I'm saying.
And I just don't get it. I just don't get the appeal. So. That's if someone out there has read it, I want you to come and talk about how much you hate it with me. And if you love it, good for you.
Okay. Glad you enjoyed it. Yeah.
So we just spent 15 minutes talking about that one. So I'm going to go ahead and switch to another thriller, which has anyone here read any Riley Sager books?
I have.
I read one.
Which one was it, Megan?
The one that you recommended to me, the Haunted House one.
Oh, did you like it? I don't remember.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. I thought it was eminently readable.
I retroactively hate this book. The House Across the Lake came out last year. And I had this instinctual, like, protective instinct to be like, no, I love Riley Sager. Y'all don't talk bad about this book. This was fine. I enjoyed it. Lots of twists and turns. And then The Only One Left came out this month. And I read that and I remembered that there are good books too. I realized, oh no, the other one was bad. This is an example of him writing a good book, but The House Across the Lake, big fat flop for me. So he's known for putting a lot of twists, a lot of plot twists in his book. This one, too many. I want to say five or six, maybe. So the main character, her name is Casey. She is an actress, or was an actress. Her mother was an actress. She's an alcoholic, and she spends her days drinking in her lake house and spying on the neighbors, sort of Rear Window style.
Big mood.
So it's the neighbor beats his wife, or he doesn't beat his wife. The wife is dead, or she isn't. There's a half-naked handyman that we trust until we don't. Casey spends half of her waking moments thinking about her late husband, who is supposedly the reason why she's drinking and exiling herself.
Is it just me, or does this sound a lot like The Woman in the Window by A.J. Finn?
It does, but I promise you the plot twist is not the same plot twist.
Same.
It's not, oh, I didn't realize my husband and son are dead. She is aware from the beginning that she is a widow.
Mm.
But the worst and most grievous offense is that The House Across the Lake is the only one of Riley Sager's books to actually include a supernatural element.
Oh, there's a real one? I remember that from...
Y'all, it's so unnecessary. Oh. It's so unnecessary. Every other one of his books, like, pulls a Scooby-Doo. You know, it makes us think there's ghosts, and then makes us feel silly for thinking it. This one is like, oh, here's the neighbor. Let's pull his mask off. It's a ghost.
Ooh.
That's not how that works. It's supposed to turn out to be a real person, right?
Do you feel like someone gave him a writing exercise? Like, try it with a real ghost this time.
I feel like a lot of people said, how come you're always giving us the turnaround and making us think that it's going to be a ghost and it's not a ghost? Why can't you write a real supernatural thriller? And then he tried it, but instead of making it a supernatural thriller, what he did is he made it a thriller and then added a supernatural twist at the end of it. And it's like, this is not for you, son. You write thrillers. You don't write horror. So if you haven't read, if y'all haven't read this, but if any of the audience members have not read this, skip it. Pick up the only one on the left, the only one left. Why? I keep thinking the only house on the left.
Oh.
The only one left, which is about a caretaker who moves into a house to take care of an elderly woman who might or might not be paralyzed. Mm. And the house they live in is this big Gothic mansion that's on the side of a cliff, and it is slowly sinking over the edge of the cliff. So that's it. Gothic thriller. That's what we want from Riley Sager. None of this, the husband's in the lake sort of deal. No, thank you.
All right. Skip that one. And see, it's possible for an author, even that you love, to just have one that does not do it for you.
I don't remember. Yeah, I don't remember where I had heard it. It was an artist, either a musician. I think it was a musician, but they were basically talking about the process of making art and how it is not possible for an artist, whatever their art craft may be, to always produce work that is always their best. Like, it's just not, everyone is bound to write a song that's not a bop, or to write a book that's not a hit. And even the best of authors, or the best of artists. So kind of reminds me of that sometimes. It's just, you know, they went, all right, I made the thing, and we're gonna move on to the next project.
That does check out, because I feel like, as a person who often it tries to be creative and then fails at the execution of it, I feel like I never know why something works.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, I can tell when something I've done has worked. I can't tell why. I can't reproduce this. We're going to try it 30 more times until we get another one that's like that. Don't know how.
Yeah.
So I can imagine that's a difficult task as an editor. I feel like it's the editor's job to rein that author in and say, nope, we're going to keep consistency. But you get to a point where someone is in, you know, 5 or 6 books in and you really can't tell them anymore. You know, you don't have that control over them as an editor anymore to just say, hey, this part, you're going to take that out. And that's why
we're
I think authors can lose a little bit of sight of what they're going for.
Ray and Justine, what have you brought for us?
Do you want to go first, Ray?
Oh, either way.
Okay. I will go first. Mine's going to be pretty quick. I brought 2 retellings and they're both novellas. So I'll talk about the first one. The first one I read was The Crane Husband by Kelly Barnhill. And I was very excited about this one.
I remember when that came out.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it's a modern retelling of The Crane Wife, like very exciting. It was not good. I was very sad. Basically, when I was reading the novella, I was like, because I hadn't read the folktale since I was in college. And I was like, did I forget what the folktale was about? And I had to go back and reread the folktale. And I was like, oh no, this just isn't accurate. Like, she just went off the rails in, you know, what she did. And I believe Kelly Barnhill is also known for being a good author. I believe she wrote The Girl Who Drank the Moon.
She sure did. And she wrote another book that got a lot of praise this year or last year, which was The Ogress and the Orphans. Got a lot of great.
And those are both kids' books, right?
Yeah.
Yep, they're both children. They're kind of in that like upper elementary, bottom middle school range, like that 5th to 6th grade range, I would say. And they're both like kind of that fantasy mythos retelling style. So that's why it's very interesting. And I've read both of them. They're both fantastic. So and now I have to read this to see what went wrong.
Yeah. Like, and I don't know, because I haven't read Girl Who Drank the Moon yet. And so I don't know if it's maybe because this is definitely an adult book. There is adult themes in it. And so I was kind of wondering, well, maybe she wanted to like talk about all this stuff and she just kind of like lost the thread. Because there was a lot going on, and I think that was my main issue with it. So as I got into it, I realized that it was not modern. It was a cli-fi big farming book dystopia. And I was like, oh, okay. And then main character was also a teen dealing with high school. So there was like themes of having issues in high school and all of that. Then there was domestic abuse as well. That was another major plot thing. And I was like, okay, we're dealing with a lot in 120 pages here. Like, I think we need to, you know, these are all important topics. And I think we maybe just need to like take one or two out. So yeah, that was my big issue. I just felt like she was trying to do too much in too little of a space. And I think that she needed to like, I mean, I probably would have just taken out the big farming subplot. That would have definitely helped. Because I was like, oh my gosh, wait, there's drones. There's like it's a dystopia. What? Like, there was a lot.
So it sounds like a lot to handle in a novella. All right, Ray.
So I get to be a little controversial here, because actually one of I don't oftentimes dislike books, but I also feel like that's because I don't often read adult literature and there's more room for things to go wrong, at least in my opinion. Also because whenever I read a book that's not adult literature and I don't love it, I'm like, well, you know, I'm not the intended audience, so it's okay. No, but one of my favorite ones to talk about that I don't like that most people tend to like with good evidence, including teens, is The Hunger Games. I really do not like that book. I've only read the first one. And the only reason that I had to read the first one start to finish was because it was assigned me in a college class, in a dystopian literature class. Otherwise, I don't think I would have ever read the book in full. So I like to take
that
little...
Do you read other dystopias?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I know part of it is I'm just not a fan of like a bunch of children
love triangles
dying. Yeah, oh. Well, that too.
Oh, I mean, the love children dying
also. Yeah, the children dying is like the big part for me, but love triangles also get under my skin a little bit, but that's more so because probably of some of my own personal beliefs. I'm like, why? I mean, why do you have to pick? I don't understand why we don't have just more polyam books. Like, I don't understand what's the problem here. Like, what? This isn't a real issue.
Let me tell you what's wrong with this book.
Yeah.
One, YA books written in first person. Mm-hmm. Do not talk to me. Mm-hmm. Go do what you're going to do. Why are you talking to me? Yeah. Go talk to somebody else. I don't need to be in your head. Nobody wants to be in like a 16-year-old girl's head ever again.
Right? Yeah, not even a 16-year-old
I didn't want
girl.
To be in that when I was 16.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. True.
Two, nothing makes sense mm-hmm. as far as apocalyptic, like post-apocalyptic world. Like, yeah, I love post-apocalypse, but like this world. This is not what would happen, mm-hmm. right? If this is, first off, why are they making a big show about sacrificing people? They would pretend like these kids weren't dying. This would be like a, like an Arnold Schwarzenegger Running Man style thing where they're like, ooh, we sent them off on an endless vacation and now they're on the beach. And then like, you know, take a picture of them and like Photoshop them on the beach. We wouldn't watch these kids die because no one has interest in seeing that. You want to see like the sport part of it, right?
Yeah.
And they, nobody would continue, nobody from the rich place would continue to be sending their children here knowing that no one's ever won from their area. What is happening? Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make yeah. any sense. Just
and maybe that's like part of my issue with it is like if I'm gonna do dystopian, I would love for a little bit of a better world building situation.
Yes. I appreciate which, like, that she tried. She gave us 12 worlds.
Yeah, which to be fair, I have not read a Ballad of Songbird and Snakes. Mm-hmm. I will maybe consider seeing the movie when it comes out in November. And so that's supposed to give us a little bit more of that world background. But I think just with like, as a narrator, I just got more annoyed than not, which isn't to say that's, I mean, I read plenty. Like I said, I read primarily not adult literature unless it's really nonfiction. Very rarely mm-hmm. am I reading adult fiction, will you find. So with YA, like I read plenty of teenage female print protagonist perspectives, even annoying ones, even ones who are like, okay, this is an annoying teenager. And there's just something about the context of this dystopian world and like, and I don't know, maybe it is just the children dying thing. I'm just not, it was never, as far as dystopian, and maybe I was just, I ended up butthurt because I didn't want to read it. And then I ended up having to read it for a dystopian literature class at a Big Ten university. And I'm like, what is going on? There's like other options than The Hunger. Like even Battle Royale, I think I would rather read before The Hunger Games. Like, let's go back to the beginning and the source material if we really want to get that far. But maybe it is the love triangle that really annoys me. There's something about it that just, I'm not.
Well then, do I have a book for you to hate?
Oh, I just wanted to chime in before you go, Megan. I don't think you will like the rest then, Ray, because I liked Hunger Games and Catching Fire, and then I did not like Mockingjay, and I have not read Ballad of Songbird and Snakes because of Mockingjay.
Right.
So I would say...
Yeah, I've only read the first book, and then I've watched the first movie, and I've seen the... Are there four movies?
Yes.
There's four movies. I think I've seen the fourth one. Yeah, they split the last one in two. And I think I've seen that fourth one randomly in theaters once because someone was going and it was like, great. And I was just like, all right, well, we're going to just go in with no idea what's happened between first movie and fourth movie.
I've done that.
It was a lot of fun pretending like I could understand what happened.
I did like The Hunger Games and I like dystopias. And I feel like I was willing to cut it a little slack in the world building because it was YA.
Right.
It's been maybe a decade now since I read it anyway.
Yeah. Like, I totally value it for what it is, and I understand why teens appreciate it so much. I just think for, because it, keep in mind, and again, everyone likes to make fun of me for how young I am here, but it came out when I was a teenager, so it wasn't even like I wasn't the right audience for it when it even came out. I think it came out when I was a teenager. I'm pretty sure it did.
I think it did, because you're around the same age as me. And yeah, it came out when I was a teen, and I was definitely like one of the people who was like, but guys, Mockingjay though was not that good.
So it was never my thing. And so I think I've just always held a bias against it, probably for that reason. So I'll give it credit there.
Well, I recently read Fourth Wing, which has been on the hardcover bestsellers list. It is ostensibly the launch of an adult fantasy series. This is how it was sold to me. This is how I read it anyway. So I was expecting a big, you know, fantasy set in a complicated world that also has dragons. This is what I went in to this book for. I did not pay attention to the fact that the author is a romance author and that it was billed not as a fantasy, but as a romantasy. And so I like, you know, I'm fine with some, you know, racy scenes. I'm all good with that. I was like, this will be fine. But the majority of the book that is set at a, you know, school for dragon riders that is all about like death. You ride or you die, and you know, people get conscripted or they volunteer to go. It is absolutely like, yeah, Fight Club. Or what it reminded me most of was Divergent, which, even though I like the Hunger Games, I did not really like Divergent. Now, did I read all three Divergent books? Yes, I did. But this was just not what I expected, and it made me so mad because there were parts of it that were really interesting, but they just weren't done well. The bulk of the story, which is all set at this first year at this, you know, Dragon Riders Academy, is between our main character, who was supposed to be a scribe and was never supposed to go in there, and she's tiny and has brittle bones, and there's also this leader of the rebellion's kid, and her mom executed his dad. And so they can never, ever be together, except the instant she sees him, there's a connection. And I'm like, this is not even a romance. Like, you being attracted to someone is not a romance in my mind. Maybe this is just because I'm 40 and have been married for over a decade, but like, no, that's just thinking somebody's hot. I just couldn't. And they're never actually enemies. They do nothing mean to each other. A whole year goes by and they are nothing but nice to each other. Really? They're just hiding. Being told constantly, you can never be together. Oh, you can't even talk to him because he wants to kill you because your mom killed his dad. But like, literally, they do nothing mean to each other. They can't be enemies to lovers if they're not enemies.
You know what, though? Yeah. I'm in my 30s and almost married for 10 years. And there is something about being this age that just puts me in the point of view of all of the annoying adults, where I'm just like, yeah, dude, someone in his family killed your parents. You can't go to Thanksgiving dinner. Like, it's just uncomfortable. I have stopped dating people because they live too far away and I didn't like driving there. You know, like, at what point just fall in love with someone and then think, I can live with the enemies thing? No, you're like, do we go to the same classes? Right? Are we gonna see each other during the day? Because neither of us has a car, right? These are teenage concerns.
Yeah. Are we in the same dorm? Which also, frankly, irritated me, Nicole, throughout this whole book. We're talked about how, like, oh, everyone's going to die. So everyone is all about risk taking. And there's lots of, let's say, casual relationships. But does our main character have one? No, because she's pining after this enemy. And it's super annoying.
You don't blow off any steam.
Agreed. Like, don't tell me that this is happening everywhere, but then never have our main character do anything.
I like that, though. I feel like that's a lot more I feel like that's a lot more true to a teenage life, that you all you hear is that everyone else is hooking up, but you're not.
Maybe.
And then you find out
Nicole, after,
like, oh, it was just that one couple that was hooking up and nobody else was.
This is an adult book supposedly geared for an adult audience. And supposedly all of these characters are supposed to be in their 20s, even though they feel like they're 16-year-olds.
See, I was hearing teens. That's all I'm hearing.
That is also how they come across. But what is so frustrating is that in like the last 50 pages of a 400 page plus book, like you actually get a sense of the politics and the history and the lies and the betrayal by like the whole government. Now that is the part that I'm interested in. And that is the part that I wanted throughout the whole book. And so now I'm like, I kind of want to read the next one.
Uh-oh.
Because that part was good. And maybe the next one, now that they're together, well, we can just skip all of this, you know, brooding and just move seamlessly on to the war. I want the real war.
Okay, so I'm going to, the other one that I had was The Quiet Tenant by Clémence Michelon. Who I believe that's a hot read from the time that I was gone. I think I may have had it on my list, so that's why I'm thinking it's a hot read.
I don't think it actually got picked.
Okay. So this woman called Rachel, which is not her real name, she lives in the shed of a serial killer. She somehow convinced him to keep her alive for yuck reasons, rather than killing her too. And I'm going to say, what I do love this author for is she does not tell us any of the yuck reasons. We are meant to infer there are some non-consensual things. There are some beatings. We're meant to infer that, but she does not mention them. She says something like, he does what he does to me, what he has decided someone needs to be done to someone. Something like that. Like she has this really like really circular language about it, which I appreciate. But this man's wife dies. And he has to leave their house. He has to move to a different house. And Rachel convinces him to take her with him. The problem with that is that he has a preteen daughter. So he's got to come up with an excuse why there's a woman living in his house that he's not dating. But this book is written entirely from the point of view of Rachel, the man's daughter, Cecilia, and his new sort of girlfriend, Emily. But the problem with this book is that it is written entirely by women. And yet it revolves entirely around this one male character. It's understandable for Rachel, who's almost every waking minute is devoted to figuring out how to make him not kill her. And it's understandable for Cecilia, who, like, this is her dad, so she's gonna think about him sometimes. But Emily, like, had coffee with this guy once, and then she's breaking into his house to see if he's cheating on her. You know, like all anyone ever thinks of is this man and what a great man he is, except Rachel, who understandably has some other opinions. It's just like, I'm so sick of thrillers that have these strong female characters in them. And we're meant to like celebrate that. But all they talk about is the man.
It's like an anti-Bechdel test thing. It's like, seriously? Like we're going 200 pages like this?
Yeah, they do not stop talking, but all they talk about is him. And then the ending was just cleaned up way too easily. I felt like it was a really, really dark book from the beginning, because at first all you're getting is Rachel's point of view, and then they sort of add in the other points of view. So it's really like, you are just, I have to keep reading because I hope that Rachel's okay, right? That's that throughout the entire book, it is a thriller and you're like, I have to find out if Rachel's going to be okay. But then the end is just like, oh, and then she gets away. And I'm sorry, I spoiled that for you. But that's what happens. It just happens. She just like walks out the door. It's fine.
Yeah. I will say, like, I read a lot of mysteries and I read a lot of thrillers, but sometimes you can just be over dead girls. I think there was a nonfiction book called Dead Girls. Because like it's the start and it's the plot and it's every, but like, and so I can see it's really a bummer when the dead girls get a chance to talk and all they talk about is this guy.
Oh, yeah. No, I forgot. There are, so there's the three narrators. Actually, the other ones of his victims do get a say throughout the book, but they get like a paragraph and it's the last 5 minutes of their life and they're talking about him.
Well, I guess I will go with mine. I'll try to make this one quick as well. It's very funny because it kind of relates to a lot of ours. So it is Arch Conspirator by Veronica Roth. For those of you who don't know, she wrote the Divergent. Yes. And I had a common thing in high school where it was like I would enjoy the first few books and then not like the third book because I felt like everything unraveled. And Divergent was one of them. I really, really hated Allegiant. And I kind of swore off Veronica Roth for a while, but then I saw that this was a science fiction retelling of Antigone. And I'm a very big fan of Greek mythology. This is my daily plug of I was a classics major. So I really like Greek mythology. I know a lot about it. And so I went into this like, okay, I actually know this. And I will say it was a 2023 hot read. It has not been doing well. I think other people felt the same as me. Also, it followed all of the same beats. And I'm going to give some spoilers for the 2000-year-old play. So sorry. But yeah, it follows all of the same plot beats, just with a science fiction element. So Antigone does die at the end. In the original play, she gets walled up. She gets buried alive by her, uncle Creon? Yeah, her uncle Creon. And
but where is the Amontillado?
Yeah, essentially. And so, yeah, I will give it that. It definitely at least followed the major story beats. I just got mad with how it was executed. It was interesting because I've always really liked Antigone because it has a lot of proto-feminist themes in it. And I think Veronica Roth was trying to go for the same thing in this, but have like outwardly feminist themes. It was just odd though, because it was like, I felt as if it got like gutted. All of the themes that were originally there got gutted because it was like Veronica Roth really wanted to talk about body autonomy and stuff. And it took out all of the stuff with the original Antigone, where it was like Antigone was defying her uncle for divine law, like respect to the gods and giving a proper burial and respecting Hades and Persephone and the other Chthonic deities. And it just gutted all of that. And I was like, in the novella, she was just doing it to stick it to the man. And I was like, but okay. I liked the original where it was like, yeah, you were respecting the dead and, doing this thing. Yeah. So that was my hatred of Arch Conspirator. I do not recommend. I will not be reading any more Veronica Roth again. So yeah.
Also, don't read Fourth Wing then.
I have it on my holds list because everybody keeps talking about it. And I'm like, okay, we'll find out if I don't like it. I probably will not. So we'll see.
What's your last one, Ray?
All right. So my last one is a trilogy. And when I talk about it, I don't dislike the book. I dislike parts of it. And I think that it could have been a lot better had it been a little bit different.
And sometimes that's the worst thing when they get it almost right.
Yeah. And this book has made it two, if not all three of the books, I believe all three of the books made it onto ALA's teen top 10 choice award type thing. So it's beloved by teens. It has beloved them. And the concept is beloved by me. And I am so sad that I can't report back something better, because this trilogy is the Simon Snow trilogy by Rainbow Royale. Carry On, Wayward Son, and Any Way the Wind Blows are the three books. And the concept of it is basically like if Harry Potter started in his sixth year, if we kind of started in that range instead of at the beginning of his time, it is very much a chosen boy, goes to a magic school, and he's kind of like the weird one out, and it alternates perspectives from Simon and Baz, who is our other side character, who is the gloom and doom to Simon Sunshine, and it's a rivals to lovers situation. I do like to differentiate the difference between enemies and rivals. So it's more of a rival situation, but they're roommates and they supposedly hate each other. And then we kind of start with that as the background going into kind of their finishing year, basically at this wizarding school. And Baz is like dark and gloomy and a vampire, and there's magic and monsters and everything sounds great. And it sounds like exactly looking for, and it would almost exactly be what I'm looking for, because I also, for those who know me, I'm a big fan of queer literature, and so I'm also like, oh great, you're gonna give me a rivals to lovers with a magic school and all this sounds awesome, but it's almost like too much whiny, like, oh my gosh, look at my person. And it's just so much like the first bit of the first book is just how much they hate each other. Like, it's just them constantly talking about how annoying and awful the other person is. And don't get me, I love a sprinkle of that. It's real good. And it's even good when like the characters are just meeting, but mm-hmm. because Simon and Baz have now in this context known each other for about 6 years or so, right? It's just irritating. I'm like, okay, you get it. You don't like him. And then we flip that switch when they like make out for the first time. And we're like, okay, so now we're on the opposite end of the spectrum where it's like, they're still annoying, but in the other realm. The second book just wasn't good. I've talked to many people about this and it could have been amazing. And instead it was boring. And that was a big bummer. Because it basically turns into like the mental fallout of what happens when you were like the destined main person and now you're not anymore. And what does that psychologically look like? And I think it could have been so good. And instead it just stayed whiny. And
was did weird. Nothing happen?
It's a British book. It takes place in Britain in the first book. And so in the second book, they all decide to like go take this road trip across America. And so like certain things happen, but it's like, so much of the book is spent with less things happening and more of them whining about things that don't even make sense, which is why I feel like it's weird. It's like you're whining about certain emotional things, but those emotional things haven't been built correctly. So it's not really believable.
I feel like that's like classic second book of a trilogy, though. Like nothing happens. We're just getting to the end.
Right. Yeah. And it's weird because you feel like the end of the first book is like that big climactic defeating Voldemort situation. So when you go into the second book and it's just like this boring emotional drain, it's like, okay. And then we get into the third book and we get all, you know, more characters are juggling more stuff. So like, that's kind of interesting, but I still feel like the series could have been so good and just slightly missed that mark for me, to the point where I'm like, yes, I get it. You're making out for the 60th time. That's great for you guys. And I'm so proud of you. However, I'm going to need us to figure out how do we get to a different part of this story? Like, we need to work together to do this. And Rainbow Royale is a great author. She's written so many best-selling books. Like I said, this is really popular amongst teens. And I do love the characters. I just wish it was like, oh, I could just like rearrange everything and then like rewrite like half the series and it would be spectacular. Yeah.
Oh, man, we could seriously talk for like 20 more hours, but it's already been an entire hour.
Yeah, it sure has
so
been.
Should we wrap this up?
We probably should.
So maybe we should just talk about summer reading, or is summer reading going to be...
Summer reading. This is going to come out towards the end of July, but summer reading doesn't end until August 12th. If you've been reading all summer, you can count your days retroactively. You only have to read 15 days if you're a grown-up to get a bookmark. And at 30 days, both kids and adults get a prize and get entered to win the grand prize. So do that if you haven't done it already.
You totally should.
Yeah.
Yay.
It's really easy. We like talking to people and signing up for summer reading and giving you prizes. It's our favorite.
The prizes are awesome.
Yep. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye.